One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, HYPERTHETICAL.
This episode of GameScoop is brought to you by GameFly.
Hi, welcome to IGM GameScoop. I'm your guest host, Jared Petty, joined by Justin Dan Scoop, Sam Claiborne.
Hey, everybody, I'm back.
And Casey DeFritas.
Hello.
I want to remind you that you can catch GameScoop every Friday at 3 p.m. on IGN.com and then on Saturday at 3 p.m. on YouTube. That's Friday, 3 p.m. on IGN.com, Saturday, 3 p.m. on YouTube. Damon is out. No one knows where he is.
We know where he is. He's just on vacation in Japan. I was just on vacation as well. Justin was on vacation for a little bit.
Yeah. I'm going back on vacation.
No conspiracies here.
That cover story is much less good than the one I came up with there.
Hey.
All right. Yeah. So, Casey, have you been on vacation?
You went on a three-day weekend.
Yeah, I did. I did go on a three-day weekend this weekend.
Ooh, rat.
Went up to Arnold, California. It's very smoky, but all I did was stay inside of a cabin and play D&D all weekend, so it was fine.
That's a good life.
My second favorite place in California named after a person.
Yeah, what's the first?
Davis.
There we go.
You were smoked in, they call that.
Yes.
So with Damon gone, I'm guest hosting today. I'm wearing my most Damon-friendly shirt. I let my hair grow out so that I could look a little more like Damon. Yeah. Been working on that. Today. We're going to be talking about our JRPGs experiencing a renaissance, the best dragons in video games, the Switch lineup, the ultimate video game trilogy, top video game weapons, and of course, video game 20 questions. But first, you can write into IGN GameScoop, just like Scott did on Facebook.
You're starting with a question?
I am.
You maniac.
I know.
Does Scott say where he's from?
Scott did not say where he's from.
Okay.
No.
The internet.
He's Scott from the internet.
Okay.
Scott Coppinger.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When he asked on Facebook, should the Game of the Year award be evolving with the current state of games? For example, should games that may have come out last year but are exponentially exploding this year be able to be counted in the Game of the Year debate, a.k.a. Fortnite? Should games in first access be included in the Game of the Year debate, like PUBG last year? Or should Game of the Year debate remain only around games that came out in the year of the award?
Man, brief digression. Did you see that the Oscars Academy Awards announced today most popular movie?
Well, yeah, a popular
best
movie.
Best popular movie? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then
which I presume means Marvel movies.
Yeah. I immediately started thinking about Thor Ragnarok. I was like, so that one.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Well, do you like it? Do you like
I would show? Take popular game as a category.
Yeah.
I used to advocate when I worked here that we should have a catch-all at the end for that one game that didn't fit in any of the categories, but was like the best of the Just Because award. Yeah, effectively, yeah. Actually, yeah. You killed that idea.
Did I talk you out of it?
No, you just said, no, we're not doing that, Jared.
So, Justin, you've run these before, and you added a best updated game, right?
I mean, running Game of the Year awards is impossible, and no one has ever successfully done it. Scott's right. It's getting harder and harder over time. So to kind of go point by point, like, do you make a special consideration for games that launched 1 year but then kind of exploded the following year? In my opinion, no, because they're not a popularity contest, and it's irrelevant how many millions of people are playing Fortnite when it comes to Game of the Year. What's relevant is how good is the game. Mm-hmm. And that is the same as it was last year as it was this year. What's more relevant is how much has the game changed or evolved to become better over time. And that's where it becomes a little bit thornier issue, worthy of a little bit more editorial rigor, I think.
So refresh my memory. Did we put PUBG in the running last year?
No one knows.
Okay.
It wasn't in the running for Game of the Year, but it was in the running for Best Xbox One Game.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did it ever come out?
It was new for Xbox One.
But was it still in early access, like beta?
At that point?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, on Xbox One, I don't know whether to call that or an early access beta, but I believe that was a launch day.
So our rule, I mean, separate from early
access. That's a good point. I forgot about the early access.
Separate from, you know, early access or pre-release or some of that, you know, sort of thing. Our policy at IGN, and not that, you know, we're infallible or it's not subject to change, but the way that we think about it currently is a game is only eligible for, you know, our major awards in the calendar year that it came out, with the exception of our platform awards. If a game is ported to a platform, you know, in a subsequent year, then it's eligible again just for that platform award. Mm-hmm. So the example was Rise of the Tomb Raider hit most platforms 1 year, but then hit Xbox the following year. Mm-hmm. So that following year, the only award it was eligible for was the Xbox award.
So what do you think about something like Fortnite Battle Royale, the most popular game in the world right now?
Game of the year.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is the biggest topic this year for mm-hmm. sure. And who knows if it's the best game this year.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because, like, the best game, even though that came out before and it's really popular right now, there are other games that are really popular right now, like Candy Crush and stuff like that.
But
it came out before, so it's like you have to limit it somewhere.
Game of the year is not like Time Person of the Year, where it's just like mm-hmm. the most influential or most important mm-hmm. game of the year. Like it is intended to be, like, the sort of missing word from there is best game of the mm-hmm. year mm-hmm. for sure.
Okay, so do you? What about you, Casey? Where are
no, I completely agree. Like, I wouldn't put Fortnite in the running for Game of the Year this year because it came out last year,
mm-hmm.
and it was still doing the same things that it's doing now. Last year, like mm-hmm. at the end, I started playing around like November of last year,
mm-hmm.
so I don't mm-hmm. think it should be up in the running just because it got more popular.
Okay,
yeah, because best still the game same of the year game. Is still Super Metroid for Justin, or Super Mario Brothers 3 for me, or Twilight Princess for you.
We do love Twilight Princess.
Well, and then we run into issues. It's like you set these rules, and then there's a million and one edge cases in games that break those rules. Mm-hmm. Like what I just sketched out, which is pretty clear and makes sense. Like, oh, Rise of the Tomb Raider is eligible on the Xbox the year it came out on the Xbox. It's like, well, what about games getting ported to the Switch? What about Mario mm-hmm. Kart? Like, is that eligible for Switch Game of the Year or not? Like, what if it's an even older game? You know, what, like, the year that Super Metroid hits a new platform, isn't it just automatically that platform's Game of the Year that year? And then at some point, you know, you make a cutoff of like, no, that rule is not designed for like retro ports, you know, being brought over, but, you know, contemporary games that just happen to slip into another calendar year on some platforms.
What about games like Final Fantasy 14, where the game fundamentally changed? It became a completely different game with the same name.
I think if it warrants a brand new review, then we should possibly consider it to be a Game of the Year, because that was huge. They completely shut down Final Fantasy 14 mm-hmm. and then rebuilt it from the ground up to come up with A Realm Reborn. And they do that with games sometimes. And I think that would warrant it to be in a Game of the Year discussion if it had to get a new review and the review was drastically different from the original.
We've done, I don't remember the name of the award offhand, but we have an award for the best living game or best game as a service, and it's, you know, meant to be, it's a little bit of a catch-all, but like...
Best popular game.
So we do, you know, best expansion, and so that allows us to, you know, if Destiny 2 Forsaken or a new MMO, you know, Final Fantasy expansion turns out to be good, hopefully they can get some recognition through that award. And then we also have sort of a living game or game as a service award that tries to give an accolade or reward the developers that have done a really good job sort of supporting a legacy game. But our awards, if I'm being frank, are probably not all the way there yet and are probably not like a really accurate, you know, wonderful reflection of the way that video games are played and consumed in 2018.
Then very quickly, what would you change?
I don't know.
The most important thing is that we respect our planet's revolution around our star,
okay,
and make sure we account for the best games that came out while the Earth traveled around that.
That was going to be my point, where I said kind of flippantly, I don't know how I would change them, but like you're starting from, like as Sam just said, you're starting from like a little bit of a flawed premise to begin with, of just like the calendar year is arbitrary.
What do you have against druids?
Dude.
Okay.
I like moonkin form druids.
What about the Gregorian calendar?
Yeah.
You know, the Copernicus, all that stuff. Galileo went to jail for this stuff.
Yeah, that's
true. We got to respect it. I respect it. And, you know, you could say that's why we do things every once in a while, like best games of a generation.
Yeah.
I do also
that's
think.
That's just a different way to say yeah. I compare them all.
I do think we do need an actual cutoff date. Because, for example, like Xenoblade Chronicles wasn't it part of our Game of the Year discussion last year because it came out too late in the year?
I don't think that's quite true. I think we had a few people that were playing it and they were supposed to like report back. Like, is this game good enough to be
we
in the hunt
always
for...
allow those to be.
Yeah.
So we've done that a couple different ways in the past. Mm-hmm. We have had a cutoff. Like, the awards are not actually, you know, January 1 to December 31. It was like December 15 or whatever. Or we've done it the other way where if a game came out really late... you know, we're not super precious about our awards, and we've added things like we added
like Star Wars.
We added Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, and so like we limit ourselves to 10 nominees with the asterisk of, hey, look, again, we're not that precious about it. We'll add an 11th game if, you know, a really, really late in the year game or something, you know, warrants.
So you got that Barry Bonds asterisk there on the end.
Wow.
Yep. Moving ahead here to number two, John Kay. Also don't know where he's from. We don't know where anyone's from today.
Well, he invented Ren Stimpy.
Yeah.
And, he lives in New York City.
Oh, well, let's maybe not this John Kay.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I think that's a very different John Kay.
Yeah.
And they may this John Kay may not want to be associated.
It's true.
John Kay writes in on Twitter. Longtime listener, first time writer.
How did you get these questions?
Damon said, just reach out on the Facebook group and Twitter.
Oh.
So that's what I did.
We have a Facebook group.
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Indeed. As a matter of fact, I don't think
hey, can
any
you invite
of you,
us?
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a Facebook group.
I'm not trying to be mean. I don't think I was aware.
I literally reached out to the Facebook group knowing you guys wouldn't be on there to get this week's 20 questions.
I have nothing against it.
Yeah.
I like the NVC Facebook group.
I know you like Facebook. I'm not trying to be like you hate Facebook groups. I just figured you weren't on there.
Jared, I've been out of town.
It's true. You have been out of town. On vacation.
Yeah.
Just like Damon. No one knows. Longtime listener, first time writer. I've long liked Game Scoop and would like to know how they felt about the... I assume he means you guys. How they felt about the rest of the year's lineup for Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Many feel it was lackluster. I was wondering what the Omega Cops thought about all of this. Now, before we go into this, I've made a list of some of the major releases coming out, or to me, interesting releases, headed out before the end of the year on Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Minute, which I really liked. Okami HD, Mini Metro, Cosmic Star Heroine, Castle Storm, Little Dragons... The Blob 2, or Little Dragon's Cafe.
I'm
the Blob 2, Monster Hunter, Gen Ultimate, The World Ends With You, Starlink, Dark Souls Remastered, FIFA 19, Mega Man 11, Pokemon Let's Go Eevee and Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu, Smash Brothers, Killer Queen Black, Mark of the Ninja Remastered, Super Meat Boy Forever, No More Heroes, Travis Strikes Again, and Kentucky Route Zero, which comes to 2021 games, plus all the stuff we get every week in the Nindy store that I didn't bother to note there. That averages out to, with 20 weeks left in the year, about a game a week plus some of the Nindy stuff.
Well, yeah, but...
But some of these
most
are Nindy,
those
are, too.
But most of those are really old.
Exactly. And that's
like,
what
really,
I
like Mark of the Ninja is a really, really dope game, but it's not really fair to be like, oh, you're getting one great game a week. It's like, that's like a five-year-old game that has already hit most platforms that a lot of people already played.
Aha! Expound.
I just did. That was it. That was my entire point.
I personally don't really need a new game to play.
Yeah.
A week. Like, a lot of these games will have dozens or like so many hours. Like Monster Hunter Generations Ultimate, you could easily put 500 hours into that game before beating it.
That's a port, right?
No, that's, well, for America, this is the first time we're getting this game. It's an expansion of Monster Hunter Generations, which came out for the 3DS in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And this is that game plus 14 new monsters and a new difficulty mode with new, totally new
stuff,
sets of armor and like just a lot more things. Yeah,
it is like if World was kind of a, hey, let's make this friendly for Americans. This one is, in terms of content, a much deeper game, actually, than World.
It has three times as many monsters as Monster Hunter World and probably five times as many missions.
How many monsters does Minute have?
Minute has it has little crab monsters. It has a few other minutes.
Minute's also on. This fall, in terms of first party Nintendo games, is just not good for me.
Oh, Mario Party.
Yeah, I'm really interested in Mario Party. But for you, it's probably really good because Smash and Pokemon are things you're greatly interested in.
Yeah.
So, like, your excitement for fall must be a lot higher than, say, mine.
I've been fine with the Switch launch. Like, Octopath Traveler, I love. I love The World Ends With You, and I know that's a re-release, but it's a good game and people should play it. Monster Hunter Generations Ultimate, Mario Party in October, Pokemon in November, Smash in December. I'm pretty happy.
We don't know enough about Mario Party, but I hope we see it at Gamescom because it wasn't at E3 except for just in the little bit of like showing us what it is.
We did a banana mini game.
I kind of go back and forth on this topic. Like the Switch has undoubtedly been a little bit of a drought this year, right? Compared to like year one, they had that 1-2 punch of like Zelda and Mario. And Smash is going to be amazing, but that's December. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, Mario Party and Mario Tennis can't quite rise to that level, right? Mm-hmm. On the one hand, when you're living it like day to day, minute to minute, it's like my Switch is collecting dust. I paid $300 for this thing. I've had nothing. Like, especially if you're not interested in Mario Tennis, you could have gone several months without having anything to play on this system, and I think that's like a legitimate complaint that gamers raise. But the flip side is you get, you know, 2 years, 3 years into a system, and when you're behind it looking back, it was like they released, you know, dozens of really, really great first party and third party experiences, and once you get the benefit of sort of time and hindsight, and you're sort of out of it looking back, it's like, okay, yeah, that was actually a really, really solid lineup. And it would have been maybe a little bit challenging to expect more.
I'm in this weird state right now where I was like, I'm not excited to play my Switch for so many months. Like, I just really disappointed with the fall lineup. And but I'm happy for people that like Smash Brothers and Pokemon. Those are huge games. But I thought that, you know, 3 weeks ago I wouldn't be touching my Switch for a while. All I've been doing is playing Octopath Traveler.
Yeah.
And then now I'm playing Dead Cells on Switch. And it's on 3DS. But I freaking love WarioWare. So I'm playing three big Nintendo games right now, or, you know, on Nintendo platforms. I didn't expect that. So when you read through that list, and even though there's old games on there and some games I didn't recognize, like, there will likely be many, many times I play Switch again this fall.
Things kind of ebb and flow. Like, I didn't play after Mario. I didn't play my Switch. I lost my Switch. I couldn't find it.
Oh, no.
For months. Ooh, wow. But I didn't even like, you know, there were no games coming out I was interested in, didn't know where my Switch was.
You found it and there was a crack in it.
Yeah, I wish. I don't know why I said that.
I wish my battery'd swelled.
So I ended up, but now I cannot put Picross 2 down. Mm. And I'm loving Hollow Knight on the Switch. I've sort of come around on that game.
Hollow Knight, yeah.
Against Roka.
And I'm still not, like, I don't like Dead Cells quite as much as some other people, but I'm playing Dead Cells as well. So, you know.
You got Luminous also, and I got that too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just don't expect to be playing all the games I'm actually playing.
I go through this habit of, I swear it's just like whatever's put in front of my face. It's like my animal brain. Like, when I don't play my Switch and I don't have, like, a cause to pick it up, I just ignore it completely. But once one game gets me back on the train, then I'm like, well, let's pile on these other games too. Like, I'll go back to Steam at some point and sort of catch up on the dozen or so games I missed there.
Yeah, it's for me, I've been a long time. Nintendo won me over ages ago with their ability to sell me the same game over and over and over again, whether I really needed to buy it or not. So originally that just extended to their first party library with things like Virtual Console or new ports or compilations. But now they've actually seemed to have found a way to sell me third party games that I've already bought, like Minute or Mark of the Ninja, have me buy them on a new platform again, or Luminous, exactly. Yeah. And I keep doing it. I play my Switch more than my other consoles, and probably about on par with my PC.
I'm excited. Stardew Valley's update is about to come out, and, you know, I'll dive back into that because I started it on Switch, but it's not on Switch yet. But I'm really excited for that.
Next question: are we in a console JRPG renaissance? This one from guest host Jared. With the release of Octopath Traveler, the upcoming Dragon Quest XI.
Wait, sorry, not to interrupt. This is you? Just asking this question?
I'm just asking this question.
Okay.
I can do that. Yeah. Damon comes up with questions.
Let's check in with the Jareds.
We're checking in with the Jareds. Hey, hello, Jareds. Yeah, oh, wait, I'm not doing the rituals. I'm screwing this whole thing up.
No, you're fine. I wanted to clarify.
I want Damon back.
GameScoop is sponsored by Gamefly, the best way to buy and rent your favorite games. Gamefly.com gives you access to 9,000 titles, which are mailed directly to your door. For one monthly fee, you can play the latest and greatest games for as long as you want, with no late fees or due dates, ever. When you get tired of a game, all you have to do is mail it back, and they'll send you the next title on your list. Today, every Scoop listener gets access to a free premium 30-day trial by going to Gamefly.com/Scoop. That premium trial lets you rent two titles at the same time, and you get it by going to Gamefly.com/SCOOP. Gamefly.com/Scoop. Check it out.
The release of Octopath Traveler, the upcoming Dragon Quest XI, Persona 5, Nier Automata, Final Fantasy 15, Valkyria Chronicles 4, Shin Megami Tensei 5, and this news from IGN.com, that a commercially successful Nintendo-exclusive retro JRPG from Square Enix is something few would have predicted before Octopath Traveler sprang into being, but it may not be the last of its kind, with Wall Street Journal reporter Takashi Michizuki at Square Enix Earnings Conference tweeting that Square has a lot to say about Octopath Traveler and the fact that the conference... we should expect more Octopath Traveler-like games.
I read that news today. That's so crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That like a Super Nintendo worshipping JRPG, which is different than a JRPG, right?
Yeah.
It is like this thing that they're talking about in their sales conference about doing more of. But I Am Setsuna is like that too, right?
So to answer your question, yes. We are in a JRPG renaissance for sure.
Okay.
But we have been since 1984.
So I said, I think it was on Scoop. Yeah. On Scoop last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, I said that I wasn't very interested in Octopath Traveler because I don't really like, you know, JRPGs that much. That's just not my style of game. And then I went on to rant and rave about how much I loved Final Fantasy XV, which is a JRPG. And I think that that thread of logic does track because Final Fantasy XV is so different and is so Western influenced and it's open world. So, you know, I hope I made sense there. But the point being, like, whatever flavor of JRPG you want is there for you now.
Yeah, JRPGs, I think, have a reputation maybe undeserved, maybe deserved for sometimes reaching too deeply into tropes. And I think people sometimes forget how different design-wise one is from the other just because the art may be similar or the story may be similar. But the gameplay approaches, particularly battle systems, are often extremely different. What are you guys' thoughts on this?
Well, I know that Disgaea 1 collection is actually coming out for the Nintendo Switch this fall as well. So if you guys like JRPGs, you should check that out. But no, I the battle systems are totally different. Even just the ones that you named off, like Nier Automata is like an action game more than a JRPG. Like there's no turn base really at all, but it's very interesting and kind of out of bounds compared to a lot of other action adventure games we're used to, which I guess is where.
Do you guys think there's more JRPGs out right now than there have been in the past couple of years? I just don't follow that closely.
I think they're
viable, right? Like, in terms of volume of releases, like, I don't know, maybe or maybe not. But, like, you know, they're steeped in, like, published consciousness and, like, their hype levels are really high again, and they're at like the forefront of like video game culture in a way that like I don't think they were 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, they were being made. They've always been made, but their success in the United States, I think, was really the part that was striking, and their widespread acceptance. I mean, you had gems like Ni No Kuni, you know, pop out, or you had Xenoblade Chronicles, Xenoblade Chronicles 2, The Last Story, things like that.
What's actually been popular recently? That's a JRPG.
I mean, the stuff I
just Final Fantasy 15, right?
Octopath.
Well, but like not including a little Super Nintendo game.
Persona. Persona 5 was
like we're talking about like what sells 10 million, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Are we really in a JRPG renaissance? I mean, come on.
I think we are, yes.
If there's a lot of them and they're good, then yes. But I don't think they're selling like these crazy Call of Duty numbers or anything.
No,
Monster Hunter Stories for sure. I'm kidding.
But I don't think they're made.
I loved it.
I don't think they're made to sell.
They are in Japan. Quest is the biggest series in Japan.
I agree with that. But even though Dragon Quest is the biggest series in Japan and near and dear to my heart, even at its top sales levels, proportionally, it's not. Japanese game market simply doesn't sell as many games as
well. It's not a very big island. I don't know if you know this.
Yeah, but a lot of people actually about 130 million people on that little bitty island.
Yeah, half the population of the United States.
Less.
fewer.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say that it's funny to think about. Are we in a JRPG renaissance right now? With the context of like what just got me thinking about. The actual Renaissance, and like that was like 300, 400 years of history, and how funny it is to think about what the first 100 years of video game history is going to look like. Like, what are the trends that are actually going to be the long-term trends?
I don't know.
Like, basically, multiplayer online games like Fortnite are at the beginning of the history of video games at this point.
Yeah,
We're only 40 years in.
It's so early. Yeah, the fact
it's really funny.
No, I'm working on a project right now where it just occurred to me. I mean, I stood about 2 years ago at the Computer History Museum near here. And I played Space War next to Slug Russell, its creator. Mm-hmm. You know, the first computer game from like 1962. And he's still standing there. Yeah. Like it would be like in any other medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We couldn't do that. We can't do that for movies or TV or books or comics or anything. But we can do it for video games.
Yeah, we are losing them though.
We are. Yeah, Ralph Baer passing away recently. And some of these folks getting pretty long in the tooth. So celebrate that history. All right, we've got that discussion. Let's move on to the next one here, number 4. So Dan very helpfully put things on the back of it. Nothing confuses me more than printing front and back.
I've been sitting here in silent bemusement watching you. So you have two papers there.
Yes.
And I've seen you flip them around about 18 times trying to figure out.
Watching me do this is like watching me try to drive through a roundabout. Like,
it's impossible.
It's impossible. No one can understand how it works.
All Damon needs to run GameScoop is fingers.
Yeah.
Oh, Damon sent me an email that was like, here's how to get ready for GameScoop. And it had like three items on it.
All right,
and it was like, you know, get the questions from the Facebook group. Make sure you show up at 2.
You're already on the wrong finger.
And count. You're required to count 20 questions on your finger.
Mandatory.
Yeah, that was the third one. From Daniel Isaac. This one kind of leading in from the JRPG discussion. Something to ask the panel. I know Spider-Man is getting the main buzz for September releases.
Mm-hmm.
But is anyone else excited for Dragon Quest XI besides yourself, Jared? Also, I'm a longtime fan of the Dragon Quest series. Did any of y'all care about Dragon Quest?
No.
If we didn't have to cover strategy guides, I would be very excited about Dragon Quest. I'm very worried about Dragon Quest.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because it's going to be 110 hours long.
Yeah. It seems so difficult to cover. And, you know, just, yeah, it's stressful.
I know I've played Dragon Quest games. I've played Dragon Quest Monsters. Those are the only Dragon Quest games I've played. I played Dragon Quest Monsters on the Game Boy, and I played Dragon Quest Monsters Jokers.
Yeah,
on
Did you
DS.
Play the slime one?
Mm-hmm.
Rocket Slime was so cute.
I
Oh, I love Rocket Slime. That was a game Angie got hooked on. For a week. It was a week we moved to Japan, and she's just like, I don't want to look at Japan. I'm playing Rocket Slime. Yeah. Like, it was amazing. Was
and then the last game like this, though, was Dragon Quest VIII.
Right.
Journey of the Cursed King, which I beat. I almost 100%ed it. I love that game.
Eight's the one that really – I get my numbers mixed up. Eight's the one that broke through in America, right, with the 3D graphics.
Yeah. Full 3D, sort of,
yeah, that was the PS2 one. That was the PS2 one.
Cool.
Kind of it really
– Seven was the throwback one. That
Seven was the throwback one that Americans didn't really buy into, although it's re-release on DS. Mm-hmm.
Jared, what's the two-sentence summary of – I know 11 has this long and storied history. Right, and now it's finally coming out here in America. So, what's the back of the box bullet point version?
The really quick back of the box on this is that 9 was an excellent DS RPG, but it was built largely around multiplayer features and trading.
It's almost MMO-y, right?
Yeah, similar to it, yeah. And that 10 is entirely an MMO.
And
never came to America. 9 is more like Monster Hunter-y in a way.
Yeah.
Although it's really good, even single player. Mm-hmm. 11 is the return to console, return to that
classic
kind of big 3D Dragon Quest single-player story.
Classic Drakkwai.
Yeah.
So, like I said, again, a little flippantly right at the top, no, I'm not interested. Again, just because I'm not – it's not a knock against the game, which looks gorgeous, and I'm glad that, you know, fans of this are getting what they want. But, you know, I played 8, which was supposed to be the one, and it was too tropey for me, and the turn-based combat was too traditional and old school for me, and it's just not my thing.
It is – it created the tropes, and so that's part of its kind of character. I do recommend for people that have never played, of all of them, 5 is the best to get you in. It is exceptional.
How the hell do you kill king slimes?
Oh, that depends on the game, depends on the situation, but if you can, the rewards are always worth it. Kind of spectacular. That's deliberately difficult. That said, I anticipated that this wasn't going to be a big Dragon Quest-y group, so I have a follow-up here.
Okay.
By the way, I am allowed to say that I'm reviewing Dragon Quest for IGN right now.
That's really cool.
So can't say anything about it yet, but Dragon Quest XI, look at IGN for that review here in a little bit. Casey is a longtime friend, but one of the things Casey and I discovered the first time we were on GameScoop together is that we share a mutual love of dragons, dragons of all types.
We always talk about dragons whenever
we want to be dragons. We always talk about dragons. It's Dragon Quest. So I wanted to ask all of you, what's the best video game dragon?
It's a big question.
I wanted to clarify this also before
we talk about wyverns.
So we've already had the discussion on GameScoop, the difference between wyverns and dragons. And just for the simplicity of this discussion, if a game considered something a dragon, we will not contest that. And we will also consider it a dragon. Like Skyrim's dragons are actually in the shape of wyverns, but they call them dragons. So we will consider that a dragon.
And Casey also agreed that since Yoshi spits fire when he eats stuff, he's a dragon.
I did not agree.
Or she.
I sighed heavily.
So does that mean that Dalsim's a dragon?
Yeah,
he spits fire.
No, that's not how that works.
No.
Yoshi is not a dragon. He's clearly identified as a dinosaur.
Yeah, he is. He's a dinosaur.
He lives on Dinosaur Island.
Yeah. See, what confused me is that his super in Smash,
if you lived on Dinosaur Island,
shooting fire, which is weird.
If I lived on Dinosaur Island, I would walk around like this and absolutely be a dinosaur. Rah, like that. Yeah, definitely. So what's the best? What are the best dragons? Dragons, worms, wyverns, drakes, whatever you want to call them.
One of my favorite. So there are two dragons I definitely want to mention. One of my favorite dragons is from Drakengard, and her name is Angelus. That's a spoiler for anyone who hasn't played Drakengard. Just the name. So the whole thing is that she has never told anyone her name because she finds it unimportant, and she doesn't want any lesser beings knowing her name anyway.
Ah.
But
it's also incredibly important.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, Angelus is from Drakengard. You meet her at the very beginning of the game, and she is dying. The main character is dying. So they make a pact together so that they can survive and get out of the terrible situation that they're in. And she's snarky and just overall powerful and arrogant, but also can be kind and is really strong.
Okay, so dragons often identified by scale or color. What's her look?
She's red. She's a red dragon.
Yeah.
Red and dragon. In the lore of that game, in Drakengard 3, you meet a white dragon who mentions her as just red.
Oh, there we go. So that's one for you.
Yep.
What's two?
Well, the other one is Bahamut from Final Fantasy.
Sure.
Okay, going classic, kind of dragon god crossover there.
Yeah, it's a classic summon, and Bahamut has been in all Final Fantasy since then. It played a huge role in Final Fantasy
the
14.
Fire attack,
right? Solar flare?
Yeah.
Some kind
when Rydia calls
attack?
The dragon, I think it's just a bunch of blowing ups.
But Bahamut is interesting because it's from real life lore, was adapted into a platinum dragon for D&D.
Mm-hmm.
And now whenever Bahamut shows up, he usually has a sister named Tiamat.
Which is likewise from D&D lore.
Yeah.
Which is a water cat snake.
Well, in D&D, it's the five-headed dragon that Venture is always running away
from. And
it's
a multi-headed dragon in Final Fantasy as well.
Right.
Okay, like a Hydra.
I'm a big fan of the bastardization of Final Fantasy, taking real-world history through the lens of D&D, and then but now, over the course of 20-plus years, it's sort of become its own thing as well, mm-hmm. building on its own lore.
Yeah. I like that a lot.
That's cool.
Yeah, because Behemoth and Leviathan, and I can't remember, there's this bird. I don't know, but those are all from Hebrew lore.
Mm-hmm. Right. Leviathan's biblical or even pre-biblical chaos monster that mm-hmm. God wrestles with to create the universe. Like that's the and then now it's become a Final Fantasy monster.
I really like Chromie in World of Warcraft as a time traveling dragon that is the key, sort of plot driver through a lot of the events of WoW lore.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of dragons that that have human forms.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where these tropes come from.
That one predates D&D, but it's also very important to D&D.
Yeah.
Yeah, the shape-shifting dragon thing is back. I like that, too. The BioWare dragons that surprise you are mm-hmm. always fun. You just be like, I'm this guy your party's known for 30 hours. Holy crap, he's a dragon.
Yeah. Turns out, I'm a dragon. I really liked fighting the dragons in Skyrim. I mean, it was one of those things that, now, 6 years later, is a little bit, played out. And you can sort of see the seams in, their AI and stuff like that. But back in 2011, it didn't really feel like we'd seen a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah, it was really cool. What about you, Sam?
I like Bub.
Bub?
Bubble and Bobble.
But those are dinosaurs.
They're not dinosaurs.
They're dragons.
They're definitely dragons.
Well, they're children.
I've looked it up today.
You looked it up today?
Yes.
I thought they were referred to as dinosaurs.
No, they're the dragon brothers.
I'm going with you. Well, they do blow bubbles.
I thought they were kids that got transformed. And
yeah, they're also people.
Yeah, they're also people.
You guys like.
Because you have to play them in that one of the sequels, you have to play as the kids, and I don't like playing it.
Yeah, Parasol Stars and Rainbow Islands.
And I just want to mention the dragons from Fire Emblem. Because those are really interesting.
Yeah, Tiki and a few other characters are little girls that turn into dragons.
Go ahead. I thought you were going to make another point.
My overall point is that I don't like dragons and I think they're stupid.
What?
Oh. Just in general?
I just have never – it always ruins fantasy for me when there's dragons in it. And it's always bugged me that they're supposed to be really heavy and they swing their wings, but they fly with magic and that doesn't make any sense. And I just don't like the whole concept.
What about Peter Dickinson's Flight of Dragons?
I like if they're Dune-like when they're like a worm or like a sea monster or something that can actually have a presence. But the flying actual dragon thing, that when that's in fantasy, it ruins the fantasy for me.
So in
Game of Thrones, I can't stand it. And I know it was added to Game of Thrones to appease one of George R. R. Martin's friends or something like that.
Oh, really?
He added Danny and the dragons. He grafted it in there.
You can have the mother of dragons has kind of become an important part of that at this point. But yes,
it has now.
Yeah,
in the first book, it's just a bunch of families fighting.
Well, and
then,
eggs.
And then she's like, the egg. Off in the distance.
And eggs. It's like, hey, there's this dragon stuff coming. What about, again, Peter Dickinson's Flight of Dragons, where it's like, hey, they fill up with hydrogen. Like, they eat limestone. It forms hydrogen inside them. They inflate. And that's why they can breathe fire, because they have a little thing up there.
That's too sciencey.
Yeah, you don't like the sciencey dragons?
I mean, I respect that you can have a magical character and it can be magic. I just don't think they should be pretending to fly all the time. That's silly to me.
I really like the dragon. I'm just thinking about like intimidating dragons I've fought in video games, and I really enjoyed the dragon boss fights in Dragon Age Inquisition.
Ah.
Dragon Age Inquisition had this like underrated feature of its map, where if you just opened up the map, it would show you the path you followed lately. And I don't remember how far back it went, maybe from the last like 20 minutes of gameplay or something. And it would see you like, I meandered up here and then around and down. And there's, I fought a dragon in a coliseum, and afterwards it was just zigzagged everywhere of me running around like a maniac.
Some of those fights are 45 minutes long.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that dragon was also sleeping. So, like, you made the decision to go in there and fuck with it. Like,
yeah. I like that game. I like the dragon combat and that. You liked it too?
Yeah. I liked it a lot. My first dragon combat in that game took forever, and my second one, I killed it in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's really hard dragons, and I really took advantage of there's that character you can exploit in the game. Mm. That she has some kind of trick that makes her like.
That's right.
They
patched it out eventually.
Yeah, and so that was like it made it possible for me to do those like 45-minute late game dragon fights. Really, fun.
I like dragon raids, and again, I'm going back to MMOs. That's always a classic.
Okay.
They do. I really actually like the dragon boss fights in Pillars of Eternity too. There's really good dragon. Well, Sam, if you want to talk about dragons not making any sense in the context of the world, the Pillars of Eternity one, as much as I love it, is at the bottom of a deep, deep, deep dungeon, and there's just a dragon there. And I'm like, someone put that there.
Yeah,
that even like broke it for me. You know,
that's just D&D logic when you go down to the bottom and the big giant monster is in the room with tiny, tiny doors and doesn't do anything but sit in the room.
Yeah,
yeah.
One thing that bothers me is that somebody made up the conception of a dragon. And that's cool, sure. But like, you were writing a fantasy book. Like, make something else up. Make something up. And that's why I don't like it when they use elves and dwarves and everything and anything.
It's just all
like
tropes.
Tolkien did that. Like, do something else, guys.
Sam Claiborne.
He made up hobbits.
Dragon hater.
Yeah. And I know that stuff's in Norse history, and Wagner did all the same stuff that Tolkien
did.
You
get so much crap from the Norse history contingent now. No, another couple that come up for me very quickly. The Dark Souls dragons are pretty neat. There's a couple of great dragon encounters in Dark Souls and the Souls games. I love
the skeleton dragon in Castlevania. That's cool.
Oh, he's great. I love him. Oh, the Boon Dragon's fantastic.
Crocmire in Super Metroid's sort of a dragon.
He's kind of a dragon.
Ridley a dragon?
Ridley, yeah.
They're like the ancient
dragon.
Do you
hate Ridley?
Ridley's a space dragon.
Ridley's so silly.
I think we're pushing the edge of dragon.
Once Ridley became a character that like mattered in like Samus's life and stuff, is like, Ridley killed my parents and is a pirate. Ridley's just this monster.
Yeah, just a big old
space monster.
Metroid did not need deep lore. I'm okay with it not having it. Let's just wander around this big lonely planet. But yeah, the ancient dragon in Dark Souls who just wants to sleep and be left alone. I love that. And of course, the red, green, and yellow dragons from Adventure. Three of the greatest dragons of all time. Yeah, the duck dragons.
The duck dragons are fantastic.
Warren Robinette's adventure.
Did you know what the name of the dragon was in Dragon Slayer? Because Casey brought that up.
Singe.
Singe. That's a great name.
Nice. That's a great name for a dragon.
I'm kind of the opposite of Sam. I think I love dragons.
A lot of people do. It's
fine. I love that. Not just like, oh, because they're so cool and they breathe fire, but like I like their mercurial nature and that they're irrational. Like they hoard treasure so much, even to their own demise. And, so that they sort of have this baked in character flaw that they just can't help but.
How do they pick up the treasure?
Well, some of them can transform into humans, or they.
That makes it harder for them to pick up the treasure.
Or like Smaug, they just lay in it. All right, we're going to
have to make Smaug
get the treasure in two
Smaug's
cave.
Hey, if a dragon came up to you, Sam, and was like, get an army of people, move all the treasure to my lair, I'll destroy everything. Wouldn't you do it?
We've got
I think Smaug had
– we got to end Dragon's Cast.
I think Smaug had to puke up that treasure.
Got
to
end Dragon Cast. Going to duck last, but I would be remiss if I did not mention the red dragon boss from Dungeons & Dragons Shadow Over Mysteria, the awesome arcade game like TMNT, The Simpsons, except with D&D characters, like Dragon's Crown,
that's really cool. Yeah,
the final red dragon in that, like when you watch it now, it doesn't seem all that impressive, but when you're playing that in the arcade and that thing came out, you're just like, oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
And a big red D&D dragon is just so good. All right. From Paul Yates on Facebook. Pick your ultimate gaming trilogy using any game in any series, but it must go in order. For example,
not a question, Paul.
Wait, for example, mine would be...
I just want to point out, I do like trilogies.
Dragon Age Origins, Mass Effect 2, Witcher 3.
Wait.
That's
it. Wait.
That's all you get?
Yeah. That's not a trilogy.
You have to make up your Witcher own 3. Trilogy.
Wait, am I just picking my three favorite games?
But they have to be one, two, and three. So
it's hard.
Yes.
That's way different.
That's why I sent this out yesterday.
Guys, you know what it is. It's RoboCop.
RoboCop 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
No, you're not doing any switching out.
They're all on NES. Separate. Don't they have to be separate?
Yes,
no, that's all separate games.
They should all be from separate series, I think. But
well, we've agreed on RoboCop as a team. So let's move on.
You're just going with RoboCop right there, straight into RoboCop.
It's clearly Super Mario Brothers 1, 2, and 3 for me.
Would it be? I mean, would you pick any other games outside of this?
I wouldn't recommend any games over those to anybody in the world.
Okay, so you're just going to buy like the Mario? Do you want the Mario All Stars cart that comes with World as well, or are you just going to get the three originals?
No way.
No way, which?
No remakes.
No remakes. You want the originals. Yeah, the timing is a little different.
And there's people on our office that haven't played Super Mario Bros. 1, 2, and 3, and I'd easily recommend those.
Yeah, those are must-plays. I agree with you there. They're
really
all
fun.
Superb games.
They're great games.
Yep, still fun, all three. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to shift anything out. What about you, Casey?
I'll think about it.
I just determined there's way too many sequels that I really like. Mm-hmm. Like Majora's Mask. I don't know if you would consider that an actual sequel, but I mean, it kind of is.
It's definitely not a three.
It's
but
not
it's
a
kind
one,
of,
two, or a three.
Yeah, it's not a three.
It doesn't
or
have
either.
Pick
a
one.
Yeah, you got
to
pick a one.
To have
a
new, game name. It has to have a number in it.
Game name two. Game
but
name
Dragon
three.
Age Inquisition is the third
right,
in the
count.
Trilogy, but it doesn't have a number.
Okay, well, that's three. I think that we're going to count that as three. Yes. Majora's Mask would be like 12.
Oh my gosh, you're right. You're totally right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what about
a good sequel, though?
Portal 2.
Portal 2.
Mm-hmm. Portal 2 is my second as well.
Okay. What's yours?
I can come up with, no, we can yeah. go.
No, you go. You go first.
Well, I understand
I don't
not picking trilogies.
No, we're not picking. We're making a trilogy out of a first game, a second game, and a third game.
I stand
game.
By Mario 1, 2, and 3.
It seemed like a good idea at the time.
I'll swap out. If you want to do Portal 2, I have a different two.
Yeah,
no, I can do Banjo-Tooie.
Okay. Are we negotiating now?
Yeah.
You can take Banjo-Tooie.
Mass Effect 2.
Get off my show.
Why?
Oh, that's awful.
What if I replace it with Sonic Adventure 2 Battle?
That's even
How's
worse.
That?
That's probably
okay, that's even worse.
Banjo-Tooie is pretty bad.
So you got two. You got your two. What's your one?
Shadow of the Colossus.
Shadow of the Colossus, number one.
It's the only like one game that I really prefer over any of the other sequels that have come out.
So Shadow 1, then...
Banjo-Tooie.
Mm-hmm. And then?
Halo 3.
And Halo 3.
It's a good one.
A good three.
So that's your special trilogy right there. I like that one. What about you?
Super Monkey Ball.
Okay.
Technically, there was Monkey Ball in arcade, but Super Monkey Ball was the first home Monkey Ball release.
I'll give you that one.
And then I would take Portal 2.
Okay.
Or my alternate was going to be Uncharted 2.
Okay.
The best Uncharted. And then my third one, Super Metroid.
Super Metroid. Oh, yeah, because it's Metroid. Ooh. Wait a minute. One, two,
it's
yep,
Metroid three.
That's three.
Metroid 3 colon Super
nice.
Metroid.
Really, yeah.
Can you think of games that are twos that don't have threes? Or threes that don't have twos? Because I can.
What?
Well, there's columns three.
Columns three doesn't have a columns two. Justin got one part of the puzzle.
Yeah.
Just games that got one sequel and nothing else?
No, there's games that are two that don't have a one.
Two that don't have a one?
Mm-hmm. I think like the D-Base 2 is that thing where they just went ahead and made
Here's
part
one that
two.
You've played. Pepper 2. It's
Pepper
an arcade
2.
Game.
Right. That's
there's
right.
no Pepper 1.
Yeah, that drove me crazy.
There's also another one.
What's the other one?
Cheetahmen 2.
Yeah.
For NES. Very rare NES game.
Oh, because it's from Cheetahmen in Action 52? Is Cheetahmen 1?
Yeah, but there's no Cheetahmen cart.
There's right, no there's no standalone Cheetahmen cart.
That's good trivia, Sam.
Action 52.
Thank you.
That's right, very good. My favorite of those is Y2, the Falcom game that is literally titled 2-2. Like there's Vi.
That's great.
And then there's Vi 2. That's the sequel to Vi.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I love that. All right, do you trilogy? We all got them?
What about you?
What, me?
Yeah.
Man, that sounds like work. I'm just going to move on.
You have to do one.
Yeah.
I have to do one.
You made us do it.
I'm tempted to lean in a lot like Sam, but...
you love Zelda, too.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. If I'm just going to be fickle and have some fun here, I actually really love the first Metroid a lot. You brought Metroid into my... No. Okay, Pirates is one.
Sid Meier's Pirates
is one.
Isn't Zelda 2 your favorite
Zelda 2 is my favorite Zelda, so I'll go with Zelda 2.
Yeah.
And then for...
Too bad Final Fantasy 3 is not better.
It's not bad.
Yeah, it is too bad Final Fantasy 3 is not better. But
it could be the U.S. Final Fantasy 3.
Good point. Mm-hmm.
Rule break.
Ooh, you're doing a rule break there?
No, I think you should go with that. Because I would honestly, if I had to choose another trilogy that I like, Final Fantasy 1, 2, and 3, U.S. is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. All right, I'll just lean into that then.
Okay.
Excellent.
Final Fantasy III.
Sounds good.
U.S.
Yeah. Actually, Final Fantasy III U.S. is superb. That's a great game. Number six, choose your weapon. The ultimate weapons in video games. Pick three video game weapons that are close to your heart.
Did you already do this?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, I'm going to do it on the fly.
Yeah, yeah, that's why I sent these out yesterday. I was like, you got to prep. You got to be ready.
Got to be the Wabbajack from – I know it's in Skyrim. I don't know if it's in the other – I think it's like in all the Elder Scrolls games.
The Wabbajack sounds like something you would kill in Alice in Wonderland.
It's a staff. It's a magic staff. And when you – I don't actually know if it shoots a projectile or if you just thwack things with it. But it has random effects. So it can turn them into a giant dragon, or it can turn them into a chicken. And it just does something different and wild and zany each time.
That's fun. So I played Mighty Wabbajack on the NES. Okay. But
of course you did.
That was about it. It was kind of all right.
Got it.
So that's one. Sam got it. What do we got?
Well, No. I just got your joke about Mighty Bomb Jack.
Oh, okay.
I can't go second.
Okay,
go.
Casey, what's the first one? We're going around we're going to go around. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I can do it that way.
Okay. First one is the Runestone from Lost Kingdoms. It allows you to use a deck of cards that summon monsters that fight for you.
Oh, I love that.
I like summoning monsters that fight for you.
Go fight that thing for me.
See, I usually won't use summoners. I think the only time I've ever really fallen off that boat was in Diablo 2 when I had the Necromancer.
Oh, yeah.
Even though
that's
he's
way overpowered.
Well, he
oh,
didn't
my
used
God.
To be. He used to be overpowered in the first act and useless after. And then when they patched him, they finally made him overpowered in the late game.
He's so good. Great. He's so good.
You liked the Necromancer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that too. What about you, Sam?
Mega Man 2, Metal Man, Sawblade.
Ooh, that's a great – yeah, because – the game is over.
Because it makes it's the actual weapon.
Yeah.
You start with a stunted weapon that can shoot one direction, and then you get the real weapon that can shoot all 10 directions. Or what is it, 9 directions?
Eight directions.
Eight directions.
Yeah, you can shoot 8 directions with it. And it's more powerful than your basic shot. Affects practically everything.
And it goes...
Yep. It's a great sound. And that tink when it hits something.
Woodman, I hate him so much.
Okay, so yeah, Woodman is terrible, and it takes him down
very
quickly. The actually, he's not the only
ostriches.
Boss. He's not the only boss that's weak to that. It's like one of the weapons that actually affects several of the bosses powerfully.
Really?
Yeah, it's most against
him.
But
that's on easy mode.
Huh?
I think that's just on easy mode.
That's on US mode.
That's definitely. True.
Yeah. And then for me, my first one, easy, the most powerful video game weapon in history, the Contra spread gun, which is imperative for victory.
That's a good one.
And if you're going to try to do a straight, like, no deaths run of Contra, you have to have the spread gun the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Second.
I don't know. I was trying to think. Well, I mean, like, I love – I'm trying to picture myself, like, playing Halo. And I'm like, what's the gun that I'm like, yes, now I'm super pleased and
the
happy.
The Needler.
Well, I was going to say, like, the Halo 2 Needler was really, really fun.
It's really fun to play with. That's a great toy in the game.
But, like, I don't know. Like, the rest of them are sort of like I was a big fan of the DMR. I actually do like a little bit more than the battle rifle in Halo, which I know is an unpopular choice, but I feel like I had a really, really wonderful like cadence and rhythm to how you needed to be successful with that gun.
Just the way that you had, when you say cadence.
Is it fire in threes or is that the battle rifle?
I think it's Halo. I mean, they all blur together for me now. I think it's three that had the DMR in multiplayer. It might have been four.
Is it fire in three shots?
But in any case, they had what was called reticle bloom, right? So instead of having significant, you know, recoil on your guns, the way that they sort of forced you to space out your shots was the reticle would be really, really tiny and you would fire and the reticle would bloom out. And then it would narrow again and bloom out and narrow again every time you fired the gun. And that gun I thought was really satisfying and fun.
So you're going to pick that?
I mean, I don't know. I'm just talking here.
All right. Well, we're going to count that one so we can move to the next. All right. What about you, Casey?
I'm going to pick a greatsword from Monster Hunter because I feel like they're pretty iconic. And specifically, I'm going to go with Siegelund, which is the first greatsword that I created. It's like the final in the line of swords that you upgrade. And it's made with Rathian parts. So it's just a giant sword with green dragon scales on it.
Lovely. it's just satisfying to use, or the fact that earning it felt so good?
It was actually one of the easiest greatswords to get. It was just the first one that I made that I was happy with. And a lot of people had it because it was kind of like the first good weapon you would make in that game.
So you associate it with good memories.
Yeah.
Sam, what about you? Number two.
I was going to go with Atma Weapon for my second one. That's in Final Fantasy 3/6. There's two Atma weapons. One of them does something really spoilery, which I won't say, but it's just a dog that you fight. I don't know why it's called the same thing as what I'm talking about, which is a sword, and it's a lightsaber, and it's only based on your HP, how powerful it is. So your HP if you, and it's, I think it's 1-to-1. So if you get your, which is what I did, get your HP to 9999 in that game, you attack 9999. So if you get that and you get the Genji glove and the thing that makes you attack four times, which I can't remember what it's called, then you can attack 999 eight times. And that's the highest damage you can do in that.
And you're saying in 3-6, right? Because 5 has something very similar.
This is set 6, up as well. Yeah. And you get it right at the beginning of the game. It's just this weapon. But your HP is so low that your damage is always so lame. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you use Game Genie, which is what I did when I was a kid, you can start from the end of the game and get 9999 damage from this one weapon.
I
just
love
because your HP is really high.
Have you played through 5?
No.
It's all about gaming the system and doing stuff like that. I think you would love it, Sam.
You like pair stuff to do more hits and stuff?
Yeah, like it's all about playing with – it's a system-based game, and it's all about like abusing the game and finding new ways to do new damage like that. For me, the second is another easy one. I've never loved much more than the Doom Chainsaw. I think the Doom Chainsaw is ridiculously rewarding. It's just turn it up and just run into something and it dies. And that game is kind of that. It's all about movement, and the chainsaw is the perfect accompaniment to that, to the sense of speed and quick motion in that game. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
All right, number three.
I like that Hyper Beam and Super Metroid again. I guess I got Metroid on the beam on the brain tonight.
Beam or the brain? Wow, you got something on the brain, definitely. Yeah. All right, so why the Hyper Beam?
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which one is that one?
It's the one you get at the very end of the game in the scripted moment.
Does
when
it shoot like – no. The middle one shoots like in an assigned –
it's career. Not an upgrade. Like it's in the final moment of the game. It's how you defeat the final boss.
It's
after,
like a story beat.
After you –
yeah.
Yeah. Story.
Right. I like the scan visor in that game. I like how it goes up and down the room. It's so funny. It's great.
I like the ice beam in that game too.
I'm really enjoying this because I'm not getting all the ones I thought I'd get. This is great.
What did you think you'd get?
Things like the gravity gun, stuff like, you know, things that you're going to find on every like top 10 list out there.
Maybe we just chose really poorly.
No.
It might just be bad.
No, I think you're just picking the ones that are your favorites. That's what we wanted. I'm really happy about it. Yeah. Casey, what's your third?
A Pokeball.
That's really cool.
Right. I mean, you can go catch a god and then unleash it on your enemies.
Do Pokeballs work on people?
You know, according to the one Saturday morning WB special, it does.
Wow, that'd be amazing. I can think of some people I just want to throw a Pokeball at. Like people,
if
Pokeballs
are weapons, then I don't like Pokemon anymore.
No?
You want to you could use it as a weapon. You just wouldn't see anyone using it as a weapon in Pokemon as it's represented in the anime today because it's a utopian society.
That's what happened to all the young adult men in the Pokemon world. They're all in Pokeballs. They're not dead. There wasn't an apocalyptic war. They're all trapped in Pokeballs in a silo somewhere.
Yeah, it's like, no, you did something wrong. You just cash in a Pokeball, throw it in the bin.
It's kind of Philip K. Dick right here. This is like Minority Report. Everybody's just hovering with a guy with an organ playing
people
to Pokeballs.
Hit the Pokemon with a Pokeball sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's dink, and then it falls on the ground and catches them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bad about that. What about you, Sam?
And they scream as they go into it.
Yeah.
What's your third?
It is the Morningstar Whip in Simon's Quest.
Ooh.
So I really like the whip in Castlevania games. It's awesome, right? It's just like a cool thing. But in that game, you get an upgrade, and it makes it chain, and you get an upgrade with a ball in the end, and then you get it's on fire. You're just whipping fire. It's like a lightsaber that whip fire. And when I was a little kid, I just thought it was the coolest thing in the world.
Rad.
I didn't understand anything about that game, but that was cool.
Yeah, that whip is spectacular. Also, shout out to Super Castlevania 4, where you can do the little whip dance.
You can just hold the whip like this, and then it just jiggles. And that's in Smash Brothers now. Yeah.
That's so amazing.
Really cool.
Hold the whip out and do the little stupid little whip things. And then they show like a smash, not a smash, but just an attack doing that.
If Richter can do the backflip, I'm going to die. Like if I can hold that button combination and Richter backflips for no useful reason, I'd be so happy. Last one for me, I was going to go with the portal gun because it's so iconic. But really, when I'm being honest with myself, the upgraded Polar Star from Cave Story, when you get it all the way up and you can fly using the gun.
I love that. Yeah. It's a jetpack, but it's a gun.
You can make that really tricky jump with it too.
Yeah, it's so great. Just love it. So that's going to be my
You can definitely use the portal gun as a weapon. I mean, if I go shoot a portal at the top of a building and then shoot underneath you fall out of the portal and die.
I mean, now we don't have enough time left in the show to get too philosophical here, but anything can be used as a
weapon.
You're right. I don't consider the portal gun a weapon.
You know,
it's a tool.
Is Charizard a weapon?
I mean, yeah, right? Like all Pokemon can be used.
Is Charizard a dragon?
I think I think the portal gun is a weapon the way a machete is a weapon.
Isn't he a dragon type?
No, he's a flying type. When he turns into Mega Charizard X, he becomes a dragon type.
Gotcha.
Now it's time.
Mega Charizard.
Otherwise,
is a
he's a fire breathing
lizard. The screen changes color as it gets close to the end of the show. I didn't know that. It's it's like more and more intense. I hear like the Mario, like you're under 100 time units.
It's like it was programmed in BASIC.
I think it's new. Yeah. I think it always does that.
All right. Now it's time for America, nay the world, nay the galaxy's favorite game, Video Game 20 Questions. This one comes from Lucas Wells. 20 questions, one game.
He didn't say where he's from?
Didn't say where he's from?
How will we know what his favorite games are if we don't know where he's
from? I'm sorry. You're not. I mean, your first question could be, where is Lucas from? But I'm not going to be able to answer that one. So I can make something up.
It has to be yes or no.
We're going
to
say Lucas.
But if you don't know that, we'll just ask you whatever.
Lucas Wells of Fishigan, Michigan. That's what I'm going to say.
Fishigan, Michigan.
Fishigan, Michigan. 20 questions. We'll start with Justin and head around.
Does your character wear any kind of headwear of any kind?
Indeed. And look, we're going with the thumb first.
Yes. Indeed means it's a
yes.
Yeah.
Got one?
Is your character always a male?
Yes.
Okay.
Now
I'm confused.
Yeah.
I just had to confirm. Don't read too much into that. I just had
to
think.
Did you go into your mind palace for a minute? Like, why did that take so long? What do you mean confirm with who?
Lecter, I just have a mind palace. I sprint up the stairs. Yeah. My head is a Commodore 1541 drive. Just like that.
Did this come out before the year 1990, yeah.
Before the year 1990?
No, I'm going to go with 2000 first.
2000?
Yeah.
No.
After 2000.
Do you want a fourth question?
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Just to clarify, after 2000. You got my question.
Yeah, this game came out after the year 2000.
Right, so we got a free question out of that.
Okay. No, we didn't.
We know it didn't come out in the year 2000.
Did this game come out before January 1st, 2010?
No.
Pretty contemporary then.
Did it come out before 2010? No. So
it's
brand new.
Within the last 8 years.
Okay, that's a good point.
It's been a long time.
All right.
We're old. We're the olds.
And you always play a character that's a male. So you probably can't customize the character. I'm not asking any question. I'm just thinking.
Was this game known for its story?
No.
That's a new one.
That's
guys.
Five.
It's a new question.
That's five. It's a good question.
Is there PvP multiplayer?
No.
Was this game developed in America, in the United States?
Yes.
I don't think we're going to get this one.
Not known for its story.
I'm going to do a good start.
Not known for its story, but no multiplayer is weird.
Yeah.
Right?
Could be a puzzle game.
Well, it could have...
Geometry Wars.
Mm.
No, because you always play as a male, so wouldn't that answer be... Like, if you don't play as a person or anything...
Maybe driving, Gran Turismo or something. Yeah. Is this part of a series?
Yes.
Oh, boy. That makes it difficult.
I mean, not really. We know it's a contemporary game. Is this game on the PS4 and Xbox One and Switch generation of consoles?
No.
So PS3 era.
Yeah, PS3, 360, Wii U, and then the generations always get messed up.
What was
the Wii?
It wasn't made in Japan?
No, it was made in America.
Okay. Or wherever, somewhere in the world.
We're at 9 right now. So you have 11 questions left.
Yeah, we're doing great.
Love the thoughtful looks on the faces here.
Thinking driving or fighting or arcade, but just because of the story question.
It's not an obscure game. I'm not trolling y'all or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Was this a console exclusive?
Define console.
Sorry, was this only available on one platform?
Yes.
Only one.
Why do we have to define console?
Because it could be a PC or a handheld. Or a phone.
Okay. Was this game exclusive to the PC?
No.
This is a mobile game, Jared?
Is that a question?
Yeah.
This game can be played while traveling.
Oh, God.
Okay.
All right.
It's probably a 3DS game.
I don't
want to
know
if
it's a 3DS or a Vita game, but...
It's almost certainly...
It's almost a burner question.
We need to know.
Was it accepted well by critics?
Yes.
Okay, so should know it then.
Yeah. Is this a 3DS game?
No.
So it's got to be a Vita game.
What?
Or
phone.
Well, but Jared phrased it in such a way.
Regular DS.
When did regular DS expire?
No one knows.
2000.
You're right. You're right. Yeah, it could easily be
11.
Yes.
This is so crappy. We wasted so many questions on this.
We gotta know.
We're at 14. Yeah.
Should we widen it to say, did it come out on a Nintendo platform?
Well, we know it's not 3DS, so it's either possibly mobile, but it's
Vita, PSP, DS.
It's probably too late for PSP. It's probably Vita or late DS.
Is this a DS game?
Was not known for.
This is a DS game.
Woo!
That's right.
Five questions left.
But it was made here. Yes. No story.
Is it part of a franchise? I already forgot.
Yes, part of a series.
Yes, part of a series developed.
Cross? No, you always play as a dude.
Meteos, Picross are Japanese games, I believe.
Yeah, that too.
Mm-hmm.
So we could just ask if it's a puzzle game, but we're only asking that because like the story.
No, so you always have a hat and you play as a guy.
Yeah. You have headgear.
Yeah.
Not known for its story.
Yep. All of these things are true.
And it's really well received should help us with this then.
Mm-hmm. Well received.
In this era, I ran a website that only covered handheld games.
When did Brain Age and Nintendog's Brain Age are Japanese games.
That can't
work. Those are just well received.
I also think that those were earlier in the 2000s. So like late, I don't remember exactly how the years of the generation shake out.
Like but Phantom Hourglass era.
Like this is fairly late 3DS.
Yeah.
Or DS, I mean.
I played a lot of DS games, but almost none of them were made here.
Yeah, they're so commonly Japanese, right? But this is probably a pretty big one that was. Were there rhythm games that were popular that were from here?
There was Elite Beat Agents.
But that was Japanese.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's the crappy Guitar Hero.
There was Trauma Center and its sequels.
And those that was Japanese. Also Japanese.
Famous for story, too.
Not famous for story.
Not famous for story.
No, I'm saying.
Oh, those yeah, those were.
And the Phoenix Wright games.
Is this
Japanese?
Yeah, so it can't even be like.
Is it a Mario game, guys?
Well, those were made in Japan.
Was this played with touch controls?
Touch controls were a very important part of this game.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow.
You could also use the DS controls, but you needed the touch controls to do certain very important
things. What was that game?
Where was Ghost Trick made?
That's Capcom. That's a good guess.
Great game.
There was a game like Hotel Dusk, the one that had the infamous puzzle where you had to close your 3DS and reopen it again.
But that's all story-based stuff, though.
Wait, wasn't that a Zelda puzzle?
Those are all just like so story-heavy.
Yeah.
And this must be like really like you're either writing in it or you're slashing.
I feel like I'm going to have to hide my face because I don't have Damon's poker face. Yeah. I haven't developed it.
Yeah.
Is this a puzzle game?
This game contains significant puzzle-solving elements.
But it is not a pure puzzle.
I would not define this as a pure puzzle game. However, puzzles are an integral part of playing this game. You can do more than puzzles, but you have to solve puzzles constantly to play this game.
Hmm.
I've got it.
You got it?
I don't got it.
We're at 17.
Do we have
Professor?
Left?
We have three questions left. Three questions left.
Save a question to ask if we've said the name before.
Yeah, we're so close.
And like those latent
I'm very excited. I fulfilled my promise to Dan that we would go over. We've done it. Very happy.
Wait, we talked about that. It's Japanese and it's too early.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's going to be something.
I feel like you've given enough time. You guys will get it.
Someone with headgear.
Don't have any more time.
Oh, what about like Cooking Mama? Is not like that's Japanese. Also, so many.
Think about so much, so much audience tension. I love the thought. This is much easier when you're sitting at home listening.
There's probably so many.
I love to sit and listen to y'all every week. Do this, and they're you're sitting like, no, it's Demon Souls. But when you're here, it's entirely different.
I'm just trying to think about like what I was playing on that DS.
Yeah.
I was just playing.
And it's part of a series.
Going to give you a last free one here, which is just that this is a game I loved.
Yeah.
On the DS.
I don't have it.
Are you guys going to surrender or take three shots?
No, we're going to take the shots. Right.
We got to have another question here soon.
Yeah, yeah.
Parker's just going to burst in here.
How about should we ask the realistic graphics question or?
What about? would help us the most. Yeah, I think that would.
Or genre would help us the most, I think. If we got the genre, it would be better. Well, but it wasn't puzzle.
You said
it,
very significant puzzle elements, but may not be categorized as a puzzle game.
But like if we knew it was an adventure game or something.
There was. Do you guys remember a game where you play as a kid and on an island and you're adventuring, and that was a DS game?
There was Lost Island, but that was whatever it's called.
That was too early.
The survival-y game, right?
Yeah.
That was made by Konami. Yeah.
Okay.
The sequel, The Survival Kits.
That game's really good.
Does this game have a sequel that's come out since?
Yes.
Okay.
Ooh, that's a good question, Sam.
So something that's like, people liked it and it has a sequel.
It's probably something crappy where like something like Picross 3D or something was made in America. Like,
and the main character was a guy in a hat.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't have it.
All right.
Can we ask the name
question? More questions. Two more questions.
Have we mentioned the name of this game yet?
No.
Duh.
Okay.
I don't know if that question's allowed normally, but
Damon said that one was allowed.
Okay. No, you have not said the name of this game.
That was usually our last ditch effort question. Because sometimes we've mentioned the game. And then...
Better name a game. We're at the last one. 20 questions. I love this game. It's so much more fun knowing and having, like, wielding this power.
Yeah, I wouldn't know.
What if it's like Pac-Man?
Well, it's because you hate me.
I don't know. Yeah, right.
It's Namco's.
We don't want to feed the myth.
No.
What companies could make games? Because we can guess based on that. Ubisoft has...
EA, Activision are the two big American game developers.
Yeah. EA, Activision, or Ubisoft. There was it doesn't have to be American, right?
Because that's also the studio making like Dementium the Ward and like those old games.
Right. Did EA ever make a game?
Like what was the other one?
Like Peggle or anything like that?
Gotta have a guess, guys.
Like the Mutant Muds developers were obviously making DS popular DS games back then.
I know the audience is waiting with tension, but we're about to go to commercial break here.
No.
Gotta have a guess.
I give up.
Somebody say something.
Hotel Dusk. Is it Hotel Dusk?
It's not Hotel Dusk, which is not for story. No! Published October 12th, 2010.
Wait, is it Rub Rabbits?
By Warner Brothers. Developed by Fifth Cell.
Oh, Scribblenauts.
Super Scribblenauts.
Oh, my gosh.
A game as fun and imaginative as you are, reviewed by IGN's Damon Hatfield, who gave it a 9.
How did I not?
We also won our Game V3 Award.
For Scribblenauts.
Yep. He also praised the game's refined control scheme and incorporation of adjectives, but criticized its low level of difficulty. This was Super Scribblenauts. The original submission was Scribblenauts, but I like Super Scribblenauts better, so I went with that.
That's evil.
Yeah.
Well, they're both on DS. You would have been, if you got one, you'd have gotten the other. So that's all the time we have. And then some, ladies and gentlemen, very quickly, anything you want to plug?
Nope. Visit
I have an anti-dragon podcast. It's called.
You can find me on Twitter at ShinyKCD talking only about Monster Hunter all the time.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. I talk about other things too, but it's
I feel like
Monster
you barely
Hunter.
Talk about Monster Hunter on Twitter.
Justin,
on Twitter?
What's something you're working on you're proud of?
I mean, I don't know. I have anything to plug.
Nothing you're proud of. Sam, what about you?
I just wrote about the new Deadpool pinball machine that just got announced yesterday, and it looks like it's a cool pinball machine full of jokes.
Very exciting. I'm happy about that. And I'm the guest host here, and when I'm not here, I'm over at Kinda Funny hosting Games Daily and Gamescast, or I'm hosting a little show called Red Dead Radio, which you can find at reddeadradio.com.
Oh, so you have things to plug.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to plug
those
things.
I understand what's going on here now.
Yeah. No, I just like – I like the plugs, but this is how I eat. Please send me money.
Yeah.
And, of course, Hot Blip and a Jump, which is a sweet little series about why video games are wonderful. Anyway, finally, a shout-out to Dante. Somebody asked us if they'd give a shout-out to their kid, Dante. Hi, Dante.
Hey, Dante.
Shout-out
hey.
To Dante Hello. There. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Casey. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think.
come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's H-Y-P-E-R-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L.